Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom, and we're talking about that kingdom from the point of view of society, and that would include words like socialism and socialization. And there are other words that we'll look at, is like church and state. Is there a separation of church and state? Is there a separation of the state and society? And we've mentioned a quote from Bastiat in several of the shows that went before this one that we broadcast all over the country and different networks. And so there's only so much time in a day, so we do one show in one place and one show in another place, and eventually they all come together. But sometimes people come to listen to the second part in the next place. So anyway, when we're talking about these ideas, we mentioned this Frederick Bastiat's The Law and his quote on socialism. And he says, socialism, like the ancient ideas from which it springs, confuses the distinction between government and society. And now, that's an interesting concept of confusing the distinction between government and society. There is a distinction. A society is simply a group of people who are socializing. They are interacting. A society isn't necessarily socialist, because it socializes. Socialism has to do with centralized control of the right to property, and the first right to property is your labor, and then the right to have control over that which you produced. I mean, if you go out and you plant an orchard from one end to the other of a field, and you nurture that orchard along, and you weed it, and you prune the trees for years and years and years, and it finally starts to bear fruit, and somebody else comes along and says, well, God owns everything, so I own your orchard, so I'm going to take all the fruit. Well, you say, well, wait a minute. I have a property right in this orchard because I have invested 10 years of labor in building this orchard. And if you just come along and take the fruit, that's stealing something of what is properly and rightfully mine, my property right. A lot of people talk about Indians that we don't own the land. Nobody owns the land. But if you cultivate the land, if you plant a crop, if you nurture and prune the land, you can develop what is called a property right, a right that is proper. You planted, you cultivated, you cared for. You know, I mean, if the buffalo are just running wild and you can go out and just shoot the buffalo when you can get at them, that's one thing. But if you've got a flock of sheep and you've been, you know, we started with a handful of sheep half a century ago, almost at least 40 years ago, and we started raising these sheep, and they are distinctively our breed. We've culled heavily and removed certain characteristics out of the flock. And so now, you know, we went to a large flock where somebody had several thousand sheep, and we tried to buy just 30 of their sheep. And they would not sell them to us because they knew we would use them for breeding. And they said, all our lambs go to slaughter except what we keep, because they had been raising sheep for several hundred years. Their family had raised sheep and came out to Idaho and then to Oregon, and, you know, over 100 years ago. And that these sheep were now specifically their family breed. You can call them Columbian or Rambouillet, but they were distinctively their family breed. And they didn't want somebody else just coming along and taking that breed and that livestock and using them, because they've got 100 years vested in improving that. Now, this day and age, what they're doing now is genetically changing plants, and they will do it also with livestock, and then they will say that we actually have a patent right on that. If anybody ends up with the cross of our plants, we get to seize their plants from them. Then this is, of course, outlaw. It's legal, but it's the result of bribery and chicanery. Because everybody knows, anybody in the livestock business knows that if your bull comes over and breeds my prize heifers, you don't get to take the calves. You should have contained your bull to begin with. You know, you don't get ownership of my heifers because you don't control your bull. And so the idea that a GMO pollen can cross out of their field into the next field and pollinate the next field, and now he gets a property right in that next field, au contraire. He actually should be fined for not retaining what he claimed was his. See, if he has a property right in that GMO product, and this was up in Canada, it should have been adjudicated another way, but people are so complacent, not tending to law, judgment, mercy, and faith, that the Canadians allowed this to go and happen. I'm not saying the courts did. The courts did what they did, but the people allowed it. They should have been just outraged. They should have poured out into the streets and said, this is unjust. A man whose family had raised rapeseed for generations, and he had some of the finest rapeseed around. When the Monsanto trucks went by, they spilled their GMO seed out of their trucks into the ditch, where it sprouted and eventually crossed over into his field, cross-pollinated over into his field. They made him destroy all his seed that his family had nurtured and cultivated for generations, because they said they had a property right in the genetics of that seed. Well, what about his property rights in the cultivation of that seed? They came in and destroyed that with spilling their seed into his thoroughfare, into his right-of-way. The courts should have ruled against Monsanto, but they didn't. Now, what does this have to do with society? What does this have to do with socialism? Well, you have a seed. You have children that you produce, that you are raising up. But somebody is altering your children. Somebody is gaining a property right in your children. Because if you go back to that Bastiat quote, he talks about the socialists, what he concludes and what he believes. And he says, as a result of this confusion, this distinction that is confused, there's a distinction between government and society. He talks about this confusion about the distinction. Society is people, but government is a creation of the people. It only has power that the people gave it. It has no natural power because it is not born of nature. It is born of choice. It is not created by God, it is created by men who make a choice to create that government. And there's all kinds of different forms of government it can create, and all kinds of different ways in which it can create it. And Bastiat is making particular correlation with the socialist. Socialist concludes that we object, the people, he means his group of people, object to its being done at all when they object to things being done by government. And that's not the case. He says, we disapprove of state education. This is back in the 1800s where he's doing this. Then the socialists will imagine that they disagree with education. No, they disagree with state religion. And so the socialist says they disagree with religion. Religion is how you take care of your needy. We think that you should take care of your needy. You simply should not do it by men who exercise authority one over the other. You see, and that's what Christ said. You are not to be like the other governments who exercise authority one over the other, but call themselves benefactors. Benefactors what? Education is a benefit. If I help you educate your children, I am providing you with a benefit. If the state helps you educate your children, are they providing you with a benefit? How did they do that? Didn't they take away from your neighbor in order to do that? I mean, they're not taking money out of their pocket. They're taking money out of your neighbor's pocket. Somehow or other, modern Christians today believe that that's okay. And of course, that's completely contrary to what Christ said, because he said you weren't to be that way. That to take care of the needy of your society, using the power of the state, was not pure religion. It was impure religion. It was only pure religion if you did it without the power of the state, without the power of the world, constitutional order and systems of government. So anyway, we've gone over this several times. And we continue in this quest for the truth, but now we're asking some new questions. In the last show we did on this series, we talked about church and state. The church is a state established by Jesus Christ. The church was appointed by Jesus Christ. It is one form of government. It's not like the states of the world. We don't depend upon the people to say that we exist. There already were people that said that the church existed 2,000 years ago. And they, one of those people was Jesus Christ, who said to the apostles, I appoint unto you a kingdom as my Father has appointed unto me. But he said you weren't to be like these other governments. So we're not like those other governments who exercise authority. But we are to be benefactors because we're supposed to feed his sheep, take care of the needy, rightly divide the bread from house to house. What bread are we dividing? Is it the bread that we took away from our neighbor? No, it's the bread that our neighbor chose to give to us. You see, we operate by charity and liberty. And unless you do that, unless you take care of these responsibilities of health, education, and welfare through free will offerings, your nation will not be free. And the church was to give you a institution that could do that, and did for centuries. But then it became top-heavy, and it partly became top-heavy for the same reason. You know, a lot of people complained about the AMA, and we talked about the AMA in the last show and their exemption up until 1960 with the establishment of Social Security, etc. And you'll just have to listen to the other shows in order to get that. But the point is that the AMA and pharmaceutical industry, they're just making an offer. You know, you don't have to take them up on that offer. You know, they're just making you an offer. But you have the tendency, the people of the world have a tendency to run into a doctor and do whatever he says because he's wearing a white coat or some reason, I'm not sure what. And we talked about in an earlier show how, you know, like somebody has kidney stones. Guy had a kidney stones and he had it on a holiday, and I think it was 4th of July, and he runs into the hospital. He thinks he's dying, and he could have because it could get infected and he could die. But it was just extremely painful. Didn't know what it was. Cost him $4,800. And all it ended up really doing is giving him a container of pills and telling him to drink lots of water. I've had kidney stones twice over my many, 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 many years. And I discovered that all I had to do is drink lots of apple juice right away. Just start drinking apple juice, apple juice, apple juice. And within a few hours, the pain goes away. And within a day or so, the whole thing passes and no problem. Cost me nothing, not $4,800. It might have cost me $4.80 because I tried to get organic apple juice. It might even cost more than that. But the reality is it's a cheap fix. And there's actually other things you can do, like if you keep your magnesium levels in your diet up, you won't have trouble. Most people won't have any trouble with kidney stones. But, you know, that's simple. I mean, that doesn't make money for anybody. But if you're going to be slothful, not gather together, not learn these things, then your option is, you know, $10 worth of apple juice or $4,000 medical bill. Your choice. Whatever you want to do, it's up to you. And there's so many other solutions. I could make 100 programs on them. And the reality is that all those solutions are within our network, the Living Network. Because there are people within the Living Network that know these things and they share these things because they care about you as much as they care about themselves. This is what the church is. And so you know, everybody talks about Google it, church it. You got a question, you go Google it. Well, what happens if they take Google away? Then what are you going to do? You see, you church it. You go to your minister and you say, I got this problem. And he immediately calls his ministers, and if he doesn't know it already because everybody has these problems, he finds out. He finds out what the answer is. I discovered I have somebody, they insisted I get a smartphone. I didn't have a smartphone for a long time for the same reason I didn't raise mules. I didn't raise mules because I didn't want to raise an animal smarter than me. And I didn't want to have a smartphone that was smarter than me. But anyway, I discovered the other day, and I tried it out when I was riding with somebody, we were fixing somebody's chimney, that you can actually just say a word into it. You push this little button, say a word into it, and then Google pops up the answer. It's kind of a fun little thing. But what happens if all of a sudden the technology is gone? Who are you going to call? And you see, you need to build that network now. Don't wait for the government to build it. It's actually making you weaker. It's a great opportunity right now because you can reach out and connect, and you can learn a lot of things real fast. I mean, I used to have to go to the library. Now you just Google it. What are you going to do when you can't get those things? There aren't any libraries hardly around anymore. They're disappearing rapidly, or at least good quality libraries. You can't do real research in them. So what are you going to do? But anyway, so we talked about church and state, and the church was this alternative to state religion, alternative to state education, alternative to state emergency welfare. And it was an alternative because it operated by the perfect law of liberty and faith, hope, and charity. So if you would do that, you would be on the road towards liberty and freedom. And we talked earlier in a couple of shows ago about that each church was an embryonic republic. That's the way that was referred to back in the 1600s and in the 1800s, in books in the 1800s, that the church was this embryo. If you go back to books that were written in 1775, which was the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, the church was referred to as a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire. What are they talking about? Well, it's a different form of government. It's a government where the leaders are titular. They don't have any power to force you to pay them. You choose to pay them. You choose which ones you will pay. And if they don't do a good job, you don't pay them. You find ones that will. They're offices of service. And when you have a religious service, you're actually taking care of the needy of your society. That's what religious service meant. And so anyway, we've been going through this book, Higher Liberty, and now we're to the chapter on the separation of church and state. And of course, what's happened is the people have been separated from the state. State was the state in which you ought to be. It's a state of freedom, a state of liberty. But you've been separated from that because you've given the power of choice to a corporate entity and say, you decide for me. You decide what is good and evil. You make the choices as to what will be law and what will not be law. I'll just go do my own thing, and then when I need help, you help me out. But of course, what you're doing is creating that common purse we talked about earlier, what they talk about in Proverbs, that one purse where you're trapped in the very net you created. Because see, all governments are networked. But some bind you. Some, they capture you. What should have been for your welfare has become a snare. Bible's saying that. David said that. Paul said that. They're talking about you being snared by these choices. Anyway, the people retained their rights, and the power of the state remained with them. A group was called out from the people to become separate. This was called the Levites back in the days of Moses. They were called stones back in the days of Abraham. Belonging to God, they were to have no personal estate. They had to have some sort of livelihood, but they couldn't profit from this office of service. I've seen this with some of the presidents who actually, they take their property and they put it into a trust when they become president because they could make choices that would make them rich, but what happens is they put it in a trust, and then afterwards, who in the last century became president who didn't also become rich? it's a mysterious thing that just happens. Power corrupts, and you the people have created offices of power because you haven't been tending to these responsibilities yourself. So you can't take, they're not going to give up their power, but you can take back your responsibility to do what is right. And this is what you have to do. Anyway, I write in here, belonging to God, they were to have no personal estate. With a mission and purpose, they became the church in the wilderness. Now, you'll see that phrase, church in the wilderness, referenced in the New Testament. And they're referring to the ecclesia in the wilderness, the called out in the wilderness. And I point out to people a number of times that the Israelites were not called out of Egypt. They were kicked out of Egypt. When they refer to the called out, they're talking about the Levites. Because Moses called the people out of the walled in camp when they created a new Egypt out there in the wilderness with the central bank, etc. And they were called out to perform a certain service. They were given this job to be the priests of the nation because they came out. He called everybody out, but the ones who mostly came out were Levites. And even if you were from another tribe, you probably became a part of this Levite tribe community because you took on those responsibilities. In Numbers 8:14, we see, thou shalt, thus shalt thou separate the Levites from amongst the children of Israel, and the Levites shall be mine. And this was very important, and this, of course, is exactly what Christ was doing. He says, I'm keeping you in the world, but not of the world, that these are the ones that I have kept out. He called his apostles out. They were the new Levite. They were to provide the same benefits. You see, because the Levites at that time had fallen prey to a number of things. A lot of them had been murdered under Hyrcanus, which we talked about before, Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, and a lot of them had been put to death under the Hasmoneans. They changed the role of the Levites quite a bit. They allowed them to own property and all these kinds of things. But really what happened with this institution of Corban set up by Herod, the corruption was almost complete. There were still isolated pockets of righteousness amongst the Judeans, and there were people who could still remember the ancient ways and were not falling for the religion of the Pharisees, you see. And they were still, and many of those people became a part of the early church. But Jesus called out these men to be these bondservants of God by the appointment of Christ to feed his sheep in faith, by hope and charity, under the law of liberty, this perfect law of liberty. They were to be in, but not of the world. They were to belong to God. And this is a job, this is a role, and this is a service in government. And this is what the early Christians were doing, and it allowed them to be a free people, so much so that they actually prospered during the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. The Christians, all the Christians, not just the ministers of the church. This is what Americans need to do now, because, and not just Americans, but Australians and Canadians and everything, because all these, you hear about this all the time, and all these governments on the brink of economic total disaster, absolute destruction and economic plunge into the abyss. And so you're going to need this alternative, because Google's going down, the banks are going to have their problems, the Federal Reserve is already having its problem, the World Bank is certainly having its problems. And it's only going to get worse, because you can see that there isn't any fiscal responsibility anywhere, not in American government or Australian government. I don't want to pick on anybody. I'm really not political. I'm not interested in politics. I'm interested in righteousness. I'm interested in people gathering together simply bound by love. If I was interested in having you break contracts with the existing governments that you've created and all those kinds of things, then I'd be political. I'm not trying to get you to do that. I'm trying to get you to look in another direction and for an alternative and start taking the baby steps in that alternative by gathering together. We got a number of calls coming up. We got some business calls. I talked to lawyers in Washington. I'm going to be talking to other attorneys here in Oregon. We made a list of charities in a small town that one of our ministers is working in, and we're networking with them, and we're moving forward in much the same way that the first century church did through this networking process. And most of this you're not going to see or even hear about on the radio. You're not going to see it on the Living Network. You're actually going to miss it if you don't become a part of it. And, you know, we have minister meetings. These are only ministers of record for congregations of record. So if you haven't formed a congregation of record, you have no way of seeing or finding out what's going on in those meetings. But that's okay, because that's the filter. If you don't participate, then you cut yourself out. We're not cutting you out. You know, we know Christ was doing the same thing. He says it's given unto you to know, but it's not given unto them. When he talks to the general public, he talks in parables. I'm a lot more specific than Christ is. But still, there are some things that we just don't share out with the general public, because it's internal business within the network. You know, we're not a big corporate church. We're not corporate in any way that you would think of as most of these churches. We're just men trying to do what Christ said. And we think that in doing what Christ said, you will find salvation in this time and in tomorrow's time and in whatever time. And no matter what age you're in, if you were to follow what Christ was saying to do, you would be better off. So anyway, the apostles were called out to be these bondservants of God to provide a particular service for society as titular leaders of society, not exercising authority one over the other, but rightly dividing the bread, connecting people through a network, healing and helping people, they were one form of government who lived and preached what Christ was really talking about. They often did contrary to the decrees of Caesar. It tells us that right in the Bible. These are the men who do contrary to the decrees of Caesar. But because they say there is another king, one Jesus, and they were working for him. It's, you know, I tell this, I'm just doing what my boss told me, and I can show them where he told me to do this. And I can show most ministers where they're not doing what Jesus said. They say they're ministers of Christ. Why aren't you doing what Jesus said? You know, the fruits of what you're doing actually looks more like the Pharisees when Jesus came to take the kingdom away from them because they weren't bearing the fruit that Jesus was talking about. And the modern church certainly isn't bearing the fruit. They've got everybody back into serious bondage and very vulnerable and in a very weak and dangerous position. And they got their families are breaking down. And what's happening? The modern minister is not being an ambassador to the government of God. That if you need help, you have to go to the governments of the world because they're not going to do it. They do a little token stuff, especially at Christmas and stuff, but that's about it. They're not doing what the early church was doing. The early church had to get ready for Pentecost. I mean, that in the modern church is not ready for Pentecost. They don't even know what happened at Pentecost. They're completely distracted because they don't know history. But anyway, we'll talk more about this when we come back to Keys to the Kingdom after a brief break. We'll be right back.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, God bless America, and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me. And many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back. We're talking about this early church and what it was doing, and it's just so obvious if you study history, and I know I repeat myself on some of these things, but there's lots of little pieces to this puzzle that keep confirming what we're telling you, is that, you know, that Herod had this system of social welfare called Corban that he had altered from the original plan of Moses, where the free will offerings were now compelled offerings, and it built a treasury that allowed him to build a big stone temple with lots of gold inlay and all this sort of thing, which people liked to see because it meant that there was lots of money there in the treasury for their old age and for their health if they got sick, so that they didn't starve. This is a very important part of society, how you were to take care of the needy of that society. And they had always done it in the tribal lands by people actually caring about this individual and helping them, and families caring about the individual and helping them. Just had a conversation with somebody who, you know, has been working for decades now, and he doesn't have any employees, and his family is not necessarily giving him the sense that they will take care of him when he's old. He's worried about that, and he also hasn't been using a Social Security all his life. So I don't know if he's eligible. I know I paid in, I'm eligible, but I'm not collecting because I know the system's broken. And because I know that Christ never wanted us to have such a system. And that system is identical to the system that Herod created, that Jesus called the Corban of the Pharisees, which he said made the word of God to none effect. And I've made a personal commitment in my life to go the other direction and create that other alternative system that the Christians created at Pentecost. And the Christians could create it at Pentecost because of the fact that Jesus Christ was king. And this is what Pilate put on his decree that he put on the cross in three languages. Jesus Christ is the King of Judea. This is the King of Judea. This is the King of Judea. And he appointed the apostles, and they came out and worked in the temple, rightly dividing the bread. And I'm saying these things so you understand when they're saying that, they're saying they become the new welfare distributors. They helped those who needed help, and they did it with the free will offerings of those who didn't need help. And I can show you in the local town near us, and I'm sure you can find them in your own town, people that are on welfare that shouldn't be. But you don't have any control over that. You don't have any power over that. You can't change that. Because your system is not based upon the grassroots of your community. It's based upon men who exercise authority, and they don't really care. Now, if you were to turn them in, I'm sure you could probably get a few of them, but our experience is when you point it out, they don't want to hear it. Because they're going to get a check whether or not those guys get paid or not, and whether those guys get funds or not. They generally don't care. And that's what you get when you have a system that exercises authority. Now, the early church overnight had to start providing for the needy of their society. And they were able to do this because for years they had been studying and listening and following the precepts and the patterns and the leading of Jesus Christ and the apostles and hundreds of ministers throughout the country. And overnight, thousands of people followed Christ, accepted him as the Christ, as the Messiah, and were kicked out of one system and entered into another. I know a lot of people want to get out of the system of the world, and I say, well, you're not ready, because you don't have anything to replace it. And there's a secondary factor to this, which is the sacrifice of the red heifer, and we talked about that earlier, how everybody is waiting for them to build another stone temple in Jerusalem like that of Herod's, which is absolutely not what the prophecy is all about, and start the sacrifice of the red heifer, which is killing some poor red cow, which is not what that is about. And what it's really about is you taking care of one another through a network of living stones and also sacrificing the red heifer, which is a sacrifice that was done out of the camp where you help the stranger in your midst and people outside of your network that also actually legitimately may need help. That when you start to do that, something mystical will start to occur. And God will start to hear you, and you will start to have the power that you need in your life and in the lives of those that you are touching now in this network bound by love alone to take care of the needs of your society, even in the face of absolute total catastrophe. Now, they were getting ready for this as Rome was beginning to decline and fall and crash and burn, and they were going through at times an emperor every month. And eventually they got around to Constantine, and Constantine was implementing a new form of Christianity. He sat on a golden throne and called himself the Bishop of Bishops. And like I said, he continued to kill his enemies and kill his partners and kill anybody who got in his way. But he called himself the Bishop of Bishops, and so I have serious problem with his calling. But anyway, his church, not Christ's church, his church, Emperor Constantine's church, began courting the courts of kings. Men exercising authority were accepting the privileges offered by those princes of power they sought to please. Those princes paid well for their blessings and benedictions. This was a marriage of church and state because, see, the state, to a great deal, was in the hands, at least the state of most people, was in the hands of Constantine. And now Constantine was implementing this new religion that had to be taken care of. They had come to the conclusion under Servius, a number of the other emperors, that the religion by the state was a failure. They couldn't collect enough money from the slothful people to provide for all the needs. The bureaucracy was too burdensome and corrupt. So they said, well, let's do it like the Christians. But they didn't really do it like the Christians. They still wanted to maintain their position of power and control. They just didn't want the responsibility of having to take care of the social welfare. So they said, well, you're going to have to become Christians. You have to take care of it yourself. But they didn't really do it the way the early church did it. They had thousands of people in Milan electing one bishop. That's centralizing power again. And the essence of the kingdom is to diversify that power. And so they found a guy hiding in a brothel because he didn't want to become a bishop. And they dragged him out and they insisted that he become a bishop. And he was already working for the emperor, so he had to ask permission. And so he became Ambrose. And he began to issue edicts and commands saying anybody who didn't do it the way they did it should be persecuted. So we know Christ was not in him, yet he still held up as an early bishop of the church. Well, he was the early bishop of a church, but it wasn't a church established by Jesus Christ. It was a church established by Emperor Constantine. The church established by Jesus Christ would never issue an edict or command to persecute other people who didn't believe things their way. They just simply wouldn't do it. That's just not Christ. They wouldn't maybe help those people out as much. They wouldn't serve those people. But they're not going to say, let's persecute them. Let's drive them out into the snow. Let's take their property away from them. Because that's not the nature of Christ. But this was a marriage of a church and state. Most of the world didn't follow that path at that time. They were still doing the thing through faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. They were still binding themselves together with love and taking care of one another. And they were still the most successful church around. You know, I point out that there were at least 1,200 known bishops to Constantine who were all invited to his first council. And only 319 showed up and less than 300 stayed. That's not a quorum. Most of them didn't want to have anything to do with Constantine. And the very next meeting he called together, only 150 showed up. But yet there were more bishops. Well, the 150 that showed up were men like Ambrose. These men who were found in brothels and were calling for the execution of people. And this is what the modern church is born out of. Now, the amazing thing is that both these churches lived side by side for centuries throughout the world. Now, you'd find the one centered around kings and, you know, people like Charlemagne and emperors. But the other one you would find out amongst the people, actually providing what they were supposed to provide for. Not all saints, but certainly not with the sin that we see going on in this early church of Constantine. After centuries of book and heretic burning that came out of that church around the 1100s, 900s, actually they murdered hundreds and hundreds of monks who wouldn't go along with ideas like celibacy and supremacy of the Pope and stuff like that. They just killed them. They just murdered them. They drove spikes through them and hauled them on the rack by the millions. And so then, anyway, after that, after doing that for centuries on and off in different parts of the world, some men, the survivors, began to seek answers as to what Christ and the early church had really been doing. At the beginning of the 16th century, Republican churches were formed, and by their chosen representatives were united into a synod. And, you know, that synod is like congregations of congregations. And if you look up republics, actually, if you look this up in The Republics of Modern Times, Chapter 1, Reawakening of the Nations, and it's written by Reverend John Crowell, and he talks about this popular government and appointment of God. Popular government, that's a government that the people establish for themselves. Republican churches, he refers to it, and we talked about the embryonic churches they talked about in the 16th century and the 1700s. And by this chosen representatives were united together through these representatives. Again, we're talking representatives. They were titular. They were a network. So that if there was a need, they could actually call upon this network. But they were dependent upon free will offerings from the ground up and through this network of men of charity. But the temptation endured by Christ came upon these same men. Who had despised the authoritarian church, they took pride in their knowledge and private interpretation of the scripture and began creating diverse doctrines. They created all kinds of denominations. By the exercise of these new doctrinal authorities, these dogmas that should be just considered the opinions of men, the people were divided into a sectarian denominations to the tune of thousands. All doctrine of the church should be measured against a love of God, who is law, justice, mercy, and faith, a giver of life, a forgiver of sins, and also our equal love of one another, as Christ loved us. This is all your doctrine should be measured against this, because, and this is what Christ said, this is your whole law. So if you have doctrines that are dividing you that have nothing to do with that, love for one another, or love of God. It's just on intellectual knowledge picked from a tree of knowledge of good and evil. That doctrine is basically Roman. It's like Rome. It's dividing people based on private interpretation. Every interpretation is a private interpretation. Only God can interpret the Bible correctly. You might get some of it right, you might get some of it wrong, and you need to let other people do what they see fit. You measure things according to the law of love for one another. That's the basis upon which you come together. And if you understood the mission of the church is to be the social benefactors of society without exercising authority, now you have a premise to come together. And we'll be gathering in lots of different towns now. And we'll be gathering anybody who will come together based on that premise. And I tell you, it will weed out those that are not of Christ. Because only those of Christ will have the patience and the forbearance to do this. Do we sacrifice ourselves in our pride and humility for one another? Are we good Samaritans or a condescending, sanctimonious religious sect devoid of the charity and forgiveness of Christ? You tell me. Are we true benefactors who don't exercise authority? Or do we pray to men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other and divide men from Christ? If we love Christ, we will keep His commandments, especially His commandments of love. We would forgive and we would not oppress our neighbor. Even if we paid in, we would not demand to be paid back. And if we could only survive by doing so, we would seek daily a way in which we could survive by not doing so. We would turn around at every opportunity and seek a way of being a society based on love rather than a society based on force. We should live by that charity and not covet our neighbor's goods. Through the power and social democracies, or even worse than that, we should not say, "Lord, Lord," in our churches and then pray to the fathers of the earth for our benefit. I'll quote again here. We have now shown from the New Testament that in the plurality and equality of their chosen officers, as well as by their constitution, the primitive Christian churches were republics. Again, here you find that word republics mentioned. Again, this is in the Republics Organized. It's page 87. These things are all quoted in the book Thy Kingdom Come. Men have abandoned the precepts of liberty in the church and in the state, and chosen to take from their neighbor, exercise authority, one over the other, but call themselves free when they love not freedom or its charitable benefaction as much as they love the benefits of sin. What sin? The sin of covetousness. As 2 Peter 2:3 says, "Through covetousness shall they with vain words make merchandise of you, and whose judgment now a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not." Because why? Because you want to take from your neighbor. And this brings us to another section of the book, The Higher Liberty, where we talk about a kingdom not of this world. And that's what a lot of people, they throw that out at you. Jesus, you know, answered, "My kingdom is not of this world." And they think that they mean not on this planet. But he didn't use the word for planet. Anybody can look this up. It's not a secret. He used this word cosmos, which has nothing to do with planets or planetary systems or anything, at least at that time. It actually came from a word called chemizo, which means to care for and to take care of and to provide for. How does that have to do with planets? Cosmos meant a constitutional order or system of government. And he was saying to Pontius Pilate, "My kingdom is not of your world." And he uses specifically the Greek word that means constitutional order or system of government. Why? Because Herod was going to sit in the judgment seat. You can even trace the origin of this word back to the Homeric Greek. This is how long this word had meant this. And the word cosmeo, he's used in reference to marshaling troops, marching them in a straight line. It's this organized system of government. And he's saying that my kingdom's not of your organized system of government. It has nothing to do with planet or being on the earth. He said it's at hand. For this cause he came. But yet you go to all these churches and they feed you this line of bull. That somehow or other, and I have to say it that way because it is just absolutely dumb, that he was not a king, he did not set up a kingdom, that he was not accepted by tens of thousands of Jews, that they did not come together and take care of one another through pure religion, and you sit there saying you believe in Jesus, but your religion is this religion of the state. Because that's how you take care of the needy of your society. And you wonder why God is not hearing you, why you are not healing people left and right. Why? Because you turned your back on God. We've seen instantaneous healings. Don't you? Do you want me to show you? Why? Are you of such little faith? Don't you have the faith to do what is right? Because you love what is right? Is it not right to love one another? Is it right to covet one another's goods? Is it right to send men to your neighbor's house so that you can have a free education, threatening to take your neighbor's house away from him, throw him out on the street, and sell his house to somebody else if he doesn't pay for your child's education? Every one of you who send your children to public school are doing that. You need to come together and do it yourself. You need to be the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. So help you God, and God will help you if you truly seek to do that. And he will not hear you if you don't. And this is the message of Christ from the beginning to the end. This is the message of Moses and Abraham and all the prophets from the beginning to the end. But you think because you think a thought you're saved? Think another thought. You are gone whoring after the wrong system. And now you're bound in it. Now the only salvation you have is to do right by it and by each other. That means you're going to have to do a little overtime. Jesus was telling Pilate, sitting in the judgment seat, my kingdom is not a part of your constitutional order or system of government. We live in the world, but we're not of the world. We do not accept the benefits of the world because we provide for ourselves through faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of love. What do you think he was talking about? I know I repeat myself over and over again, but how many times, you don't know how many times people have come to me and said, you know, I heard you say it, I heard you say it, I heard you say it, and then all of a sudden it clicked. Somebody was telling me about a school teacher who had been teaching math for years and years and years. And he was up there explaining something on the chalkboard that he had explained many times before, and all of a sudden his chalk stopped, and he says, oh, I get it. He had been explaining it for years, but he didn't get it. Memorizing it doesn't mean you get it. You'd be surprised at how many people hear what I have to say, come back to me weeks later, months later, even years later, and say, I know what you said was important, but I can't remember any. When I got back home, I couldn't remember. I knew it was important. It kept bothering me until I came back and heard it again. And then I realized now, except in some of those cases, they went away and forgot it again, because it wasn't really written on their hearts and on their minds by God. They could see that it made sense, but they couldn't do it. You have to repent, and that's deep down in your souls and in your heart is where that repentance takes place. Jesus had been saying his kingdom was at hand. We were to preach it was at hand. He was going to take it from the Pharisees. He was going to give it to another who would bear fruit. He appointed the kingdom to his little flock as he said he was going to do. What did it say in Matthew 2:2? Where is he that is born king of the Jews? Herod knew it. Magi knew it. Angels knew it. Shepherds knew it. When Jesus entered Jerusalem, thousands hailed him as the highest son of David, the Messiah, the Messiah, the anointed, the king. Jesus said that it was for that cause that he came into the world. And even the procurator of Rome defended him as the king of the Jews and officially proclaimed him as such in an epigraph nailed to the cross in three languages. The only one who do not seem to get it is the modern Christians, who have no king except the modern Caesars of the world, the fathers of their nation, the patronuses who provide them with benefit after benefit after benefit from the blood and sweat of their neighbors, who they devour daily, and now they even devour their children with the debt because all their systems are bankrupt. You don't need a crystal ball to know what's coming. You just need common sense. You need to read Matthew 20:25, Mark 10:42, Luke 22:25, and I could go on with hundreds of other places in the Bible where you need to re-examine the private interpretation that you have come to concerning the gospel of the kingdom. But we'll have to do that another time, because we're out of time. And until we meet again, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.